You know. He slams the door shut and joins me at the table, ripping the plate and fork from underneath my nose, and then shoveling half the quiche down his throat before I can even protest. That was mine. I reach over and try to wrest it back.
Sandra would want you to share with me.
He holds me off with one hand, again. Damn, I need to start a weightlifting program. I try one more time to grab the plate back, and this time Reed doesn't fend me off. He pulls me in, and the surprise move makes me lose my balance. I end up tumbling into his lap, with my legs splayed on either side of his broad thighs. My attempts to wriggle free are put to an end when he clamps one hand around my butt and pulls me against him. When he kisses me, I can't help but respond eagerly, wanting him to make those husky noises that tell me how hot I get him. "You left this morning," I say when he releases my mouth. I wish I could stuff the words back in, because I'm afraid he's going to say something hurtful.
"Didn't want to,"
he replies. "Why do you leave?" All my pride is left on the floor, but my weakness doesn't turn him off. He runs his fingers through my hair.
"Because I'm weak when it comes to you. I don't trust myself to be in your bed all night. Hell, I should be thrown in jail for half the things I just think about."
His words fill me with giddy pleasure. "You think too much." He makes some indecipherable noise, impatience, cynicism, humor, and then kisses me again. Soon the kissing isn't enough. I reach down to tug at the bottom of his shirt. His hands are all over me, too, inside my t-shirt, down the elastic waistband of my shorts. I strain toward him, seeking the release I've discovered only Reed can provide. A scuffling noise outside the kitchen breaks us apart. "Did you hear something?" I whisper. Reed stands up in one smooth and powerful gesture, still holding me in his arms, and walks out into the hall. It's empty. Setting me on my feet, he gives my butt a little smack.
"Why don't you go put a swimsuit on?"
Why would I want to do that? I just want to go back to the table and sit on his lap while he kisses me senseless, but he's already moving outside.
"Because we're going for a swim,"
he calls over his shoulder. With a sigh, I trudge upstairs. When I reach the top, I see Brooke coming out of my room, or at least that's what it looks like. I halt in my tracks, anger and suspicion forming a tight pretzel in my gut. What the hell was she doing in my bedroom? Oh shit, my money is in there. What if she took it? I scan her quickly, but she doesn't have a purse, and her clothes are so tight that there's no way she can hide a stack of cash on her. Still, she doesn't belong here. And I make my displeasure known as I march toward her. "What are you doing here?" I demand. She saunters my way.
"Well, if it isn't little orphaned Ella, the new princess of Castle Royal."
"I thought you told Callum you were leaving and never coming back," I say warily. "Don't you wish?" She sneers and flicks her long blonde hair to one side. Whatever warm feelings she may have had for me are long gone. There's no point in engaging. So I sidestep her and move in front of my bedroom door. "Stay out of my room. I'm serious, Brooke. If I catch you up here again, I'm telling Callum."
"Right. Callum. Your savior. The man who swept you out of the gutter and brought you to his palace."
Bitterness fills her eyes.
"He did the same thing for me. He saved me too, remember? But guess what, sweetie? We're disposable. We're all fucking disposable to him."
She waves a perfectly manicured finger in my face.
"Your life is transformed, isn't it? Like some princess out of a fairy tale. But fairy tales aren't real. Girls like us, we'll always turn back into a pumpkin after the ball."
I notice that her eyes have started to glisten with unshed tears.
"Brooke," I say gently, "let me call you a cab, okay?"
My heart softens toward her. She's hurting and needs help. I don't know what I can do for her, though. Other than a safe ride home.
"He'll tire of you, too," Brooke continues, as if I hadn't even spoken.
My response doesn't matter. She just needs an audience. Mark my words. "Thanks for your insight," I say dryly, "but I think it's time for you to go."
I try to steer her toward the stairs, but she flinches away, stumbling against the opposite wall. A peal of maniacal laughter tumbles from her cherry-red lips. I've had the royals in my palm for a lot longer than you have, honey. I'm done listening to her. She just wants to whine and badmouth the royals. My patience evaporates, so I just duck into my room, slam the door shut, and run to the bathroom. With a shaking hand, I feel inside the cabinet. When my hand brushes across the taped wad of bills, I sag with relief. I need to move my cash to somewhere only I have access. ASAP.
What's wrong?
Reed asks the moment I step onto the patio. I can't answer him immediately, because my tongue is attached to the roof of my mouth. I don't know how I'm supposed to function when Reed stands there in only a pair of board shorts that look like they're about to drop off his hips. His chest is a wall of lickable muscle, and it's hard to concentrate. My argument with Brooke fades in importance when the hottest guy on the planet is standing there on display for me.
Ella, he prompts with humor in his voice.
What? I shake myself. Oh, I'm sorry. It was Brooke. She was coming out of my bedroom, or at least I think it was my bedroom. Callum's room is on the other side of the house. The sweeping staircase bisects the two wings, and the boys' rooms are on one side, and Callum's room is on the other. Guest rooms are on the first floor. There was absolutely no reason for Brooke to be on our side of the house. Reed frowns and starts to move toward the door. She left, I tell him. I saw her car heading down the drive before I came out here.
We need to change the gate code, he mutters.
Mm-hmm. I can't stop staring. Before I can blink, Reed lifts me in his arms and throws me in the pool. I land with a huge awkward splash, spitting up water as I kick up to the surface. What was that for? I yell, pulling wet strands of hair away from my face. He grins wickedly.
You looked like you needed cooling off.
You're one to talk. I swing myself onto the tiled surround and lunge for him. He skates away easily. There's no point in chasing him. He's bigger and faster than me, so I have to resort to trickery. I pretend to bang my foot against a lounger. Ouch! I holler, and stagger over to the pool's edge, where I bend down and clutch my foot. Reed comes over immediately.
You okay?
I lift my supposedly hurt foot up for his inspection. I stubbed my toe. He leans down, and I push him into the water. He surfaces immediately, whipping his head around to get the water out of his eyes. Then he grins.
I let you do that.
Sure you did. I watch with fascination as the water clings to his body. He beckons me toward him.
We're both wet, so you might as well get your pretty ass in the pool.
Why? So you can dunk me?
I won't dunk you.
He holds up two fingers.
Scout's honor.
I squint at his spread fingers. I think that's the Vulcan greeting, not a scout's pledge. He slaps a hand hard against the surface, and a huge wave of water sprays over me.
Smartass. The Vulcan greeting is four fingers. Now don't make me come out there.
I'm only getting in because I want to, not because you ordered me to. Reed rolls his eyes and sprays me again. I back up and then run hard, launching myself high in the air, and then curling into a ball to drop right beside Reed. I hear him hoot with laughter as I sink into the water. We spend about 10 minutes trying to drown each other. In the process, I might have tugged his shorts down a little too far, and he might have grazed my bikini top with his hand. My body responds immediately to even the light caress. The next time I dive for his hips, he wraps his hands around my wrists and hauls me up to the surface. He drags me backward until he's sitting on the ledge that surrounds the pool, and I'm standing in front of him, still in the water.
You think you can de-pants me, huh?
I was just swimming, I blink. I'm innocent, officer. I raise my still shackled wrists. Reed flicks a finger over my breast.
You don't look innocent.
In retaliation, I run my foot along his calf and smile smugly as he shifts uncomfortably against the tile. It's cold out here, I say. Anyone would nip out.
If you're cold, I should warm you up.
He takes his free hand and nudges aside my bikini top until I'm fully exposed. I think I've always closed my eyes before when he's touched me here, and it's shockingly erotic to watch him, in broad daylight, take me into his mouth. He gives me a gentle little bite, and then licks the sting away, before opening his mouth and sucking my nipple. Holy hell. I think I'm gonna drown in here, I gasp. He lifts his head and gives me a wicked look.
We can't have that.
Then he boosts me out of the pool and drags me to the pool house. Breathless, we tumble onto the couch. Then Reed rolls onto his back and pulls me on top of him, so I'm straddling his thighs. We're both soaking wet, but I don't care that my hair is dripping water all over his bare chest. I'm too busy moaning, because his hands are tugging on my bikini top, and his hips are rocking up against me. He pulls at the strings around my neck and back, and my bikini falls off. Heat instantly floods his gaze.
I wanted you from the second I saw you, he confesses.
Really? I tease. You mean when I walked into your house for the first time, and you stood up at the railing glaring at me?
Oh, yeah. You came in dressed like a hobo, with that flannel shirt buttoned all the way to your neck, and your eyes blazing up at me. It was the hottest thing I've ever seen.
I think we have different definitions of hot. He laughs. Speaking of hot, his chest is on fire, burning my palms as I stroke his pecs. When I lean down to kiss him, he responds so eagerly that it takes my breath away. Our lips fit perfectly. I run my hands over his chest and his breath sucks in. The muscles there quiver beneath my fingertips. I love knowing that I'm the one turning him on. I'm turning on Reed Royal, the guy who scowls instead of smiles, who keeps his emotions under lock and key, hiding them from the world. He's not hiding anything right now. His desire for me is written all over his face. I can feel it when he presses against me. I bend my head to kiss him again, and he makes me gasp by sucking on my tongue. Then he makes me moan by using his thumbs to toy with my nipples. Breathing hard, I lean into his palms, and a frustrated noise leaves his mouth.
I'm being selfish again,
he mutters. I like it when you're selfish, I breathe. He gives a strangled laugh, then rolls us over again and slips one hand inside my bathing suit bottoms.
I want to make you feel good.
His lips find mine, and a zing of pleasure races through me. I close my eyes and ride the incredible waves of sensation until we're both breathing hard enough to fog up every pane of glass in the pool house. Reed. His name shudders out as my surroundings fade. My brain shuts down. All I can do is let the soaring pleasure take over. When I crash back to Earth, he's grinning at me, looking mighty pleased with himself. I narrow my eyes, wanting to smack him for having the power to make me lose control like that. But that's a stupid thought, because, oh my God, that felt good. But it wouldn't hurt to level the playing field a little. I shove him so that he's flat on his back again. Then I start kissing his chest, every glorious inch of it. Reed's breathing grows unsteady. When my lips travel down to the waistband of his trunks, he tenses up. I lift my head to check his expression. It's tight with anticipation. My fingers shake as I toy with his waistband. Reed? His eyes are closed now. Can you teach me how to, I mumble out a vague, you know. His eyes snap open. To my annoyance, he looks like he's trying not to laugh.
Yeah, sure.
I bristle.
Yeah, sure. I don't have to if you don't want.
I want. He answers so comically fast that I'm the one laughing now.
I really, really want.
He quickly eases his board shorts down. My heart pounds as I bring my mouth close to him. I want to do this right, but because I can feel him watching me, self-consciousness makes me want to run.
You've really never done this,
he says hoarsely. I shake my head. For some reason, he looks really upset by that, What's wrong?
My forehead creases when his expression grows even more tortured.
I'm such an asshole. All the stuff I said to you on the yacht. You should hate me, Ella.
But I don't. I rub my hand along his knee. Teach me how to make it good for you.
It's already good.
His eyes are hazy. And he cups the back of my head, gently threading his fingers through my hair. His other hand reaches for one of mine, and he slowly wraps my fingers around him.
Use your hand too, he whispers.
I give a little pump. Like that?
Yeah, like that. That's good.
Feeling bolder, I take the tip of him in my mouth and suck. He almost jerks off the couch.
That's even better, he growls.
I smile against him, enjoying the noises he's making. I might not have experience, but I hope my enthusiasm makes up for it, because I really want to make him feel good. I want him to lose control. He keeps stroking my hair, and I get my wish sooner rather than later. He comes apart beneath me, trembling wildly, and when I crawl up his body afterward, he holds me tight to him and says,
I don't deserve this.
I want to ask him what he means, but I don't get the chance. Loud pounding on one of the glass doors interrupts us.
Little sis, big bro, banging time's over.
It's Easton, and he's laughing hysterically as he hammers his fist against the glass.
Get lost, Reed calls back. Love to, but Dad just called. He's on his way home and wants to take us out for dinner later. He'll be here in 5.
Damn.
Reed sits up and shoves a hand through his hair. Then he looks at our naked bodies and grins.
We should get dressed. Dad'll shit a brick if he finds us like this.
Will he? For the first time since this thing with Reed started, I let myself think about how Callum would react if he knew. My heart sinks to the pit of my stomach, because I think Reed might be right. I've been in Bayview only a month, and Callum is already super protective of me.
Hell, he was protective of me before he even knew me.
Callum won't like this. My gaze fixes on Reed's bare butt as he stands up and yanks his trunks up his hips.
No, Callum will hate this.
Chapter 31.
Ella!
Callum calls from the base of the stairs 30 minutes later.
Come down. I've got something to show you.
I roll over and pull a pillow over my head. I don't want to leave my bedroom. I came up here to change for dinner, but really, I've just been lying in bed, reliving every awesome thing that happened in the pool house. I don't want to go downstairs and see Callum and worry about what he'd say or how he'd feel if he knew what Reed and I had been doing. I just want to stay in this pink cocoon and hug my memory tight. Because what we did in the pool house was good and right, and nothing is going to ruin that memory for me. But the insistent call for me to get downstairs is hard to ignore, especially when Easton is now outside my door, pounding on the wood.
Come on, Ella! I'm hungry, and Dad won't let us leave for the restaurant until you come down!
I'm coming! I fling myself out of the bed and shove my feet into the deck shoes, which are becoming my favorite pair of footwear. They are so freaking comfortable. I wonder for a second if wearing boat shoes outside of a boat is a huge faux pas, but then I decide I don't really care. When I reach the second floor landing, all the royals are waiting for me down below, wearing varying degrees of smiles, from a sly one on Reed's face to a huge ear-to-ear one on Callum. Can one of you stare at the ceiling? I grumble. You're making me self-conscious.
Callum makes an impatient gesture. Come outside and we'll all stare at what's in the driveway.
Against my will, I feel a swell of excitement. My car, or at least the car that Callum got for me to drive, must have arrived. I try not to run down the stairs, but Easton is tired of waiting. He takes the stairs 2 at a time and then drags me down to the foyer, and the rest of the royals push me outside. In the center of the driveway, at the foot of the wide, tiled steps, sits a 2-seater convertible.
The interior is covered in cream leather and dark shiny wood. The chrome on the steering wheel gleams so brightly that I almost have to shade my eyes. But none of that is as shocking as the color. Not pink, not red, but a true royal blue. The same blue that adorned the plane that flew me here. The same one on Callum's business cards. My eyes fly to Callum, and he nods.
Had it painted in our California factory. It's royal blue, and the formula is patented by Atlantic Aviation.
Reed presses a hand at the small of my back, and I stumble forward down to the car. It's so beautiful and clean and new that I'm afraid to even drive it.
You ready to go for a ride?
No, not really, I confess. They all laugh, not at me, but in a genuine good-hearted amusement. My heart lurches. Is this really my family? The thought makes the few barriers I had left crumble away. Callum hands me the keys, along with a piece of paper.
This is the title to the car. No matter what happens, this is yours.
Meaning that if I decide to leave, for whatever reason, he expects me to take this car with me. Which is nuts, because I'm scared to even sit in it.
Come on, let's take this baby for a spin.
Reed opens the passenger door and slides in. With all of them watching expectantly, I have no other choice but to walk around to the driver's side. Reed explains how to move my seat forward, tilt the wheel down, and operate the radio, the most important feature. And then, with a literal press of a button, the engine roars to life, and we're off. I hate driving, I admit, as I steer the car down the quiet two-lane road that leads to the royal residence. My fingers are clutching the wheel hard, and I can't seem to bring myself to drive more than 25 miles an hour. The homes along this tree-lined boulevard are either gated, or the driveway is so long you can't see anything but a blacktop lane swallowed up by trees and bougainvillea. The car is small enough that Reed can easily stretch his arm to rest it on the back of my seat. He threads his fingers through the ends of my hair.
It's a good thing you have me then, because I like driving.
Do I? I ask quietly, almost glad that I have to stare at the road instead of into his blue eyes. Have you, that is?
Yeah, I think you do.
And for the rest of the ride, it feels like I'm flying.
Looks like you enjoyed yourself.
Callum greets us when we return. Best ride ever, I declare. And then because I'm giddy with happiness, I throw myself into his arms. You've been too good to me, Callum. Thank you. Thank you for everything. Callum's stunned by my outburst of emotion, but hugs me back quickly. The boys separate us, complaining about their empty stomachs, and we all go out to a steak place down the road, where the royals eat enough for 5 families. When we get home, I run upstairs to add the drive to my mental catalog of wonderful things that have happened in my life. I place it right after blowjob. That night, so late even the mice have tucked their babies in, Reed slides into my bed. I was having the best dream, I mumble, as he curls his body around my back.
What was it?
He says roughly. That you showed up in my bedroom and held me all night long.
I like that dream,
he whispers in my ear, and then he does just that. Holds me until I fall asleep. He's gone again when I wake up, but the smell of him is on my sheets. Downstairs, I find him leaning against the kitchen table. Don't you have practice? I ask lightly, not willing to believe that he still wants to drive me to work.
Can't have you on the road this early in a new vehicle. You need to break it in some more before you handle it while you're half asleep.
I try to downplay the way my excited heart is bouncing around the walls of my chest. Hey, I was sleeping innocently until a big bear came in and decided that my bed was just right. He tugs on my hair.
I think you got the wrong fairy tale here.
What would be the right one? Aladdin, because you plan to take me on a magical carpet ride? I waggle my eyebrows. Reed bursts out laughing.
Is that what you think of my dick? That it's magical?
I blush so furiously that he laughs even harder. Damn, you really are a virgin, aren't you? Cheeks still flaming, I flip up my middle finger. That's what I think of you and your magical, dick? He supplies between laughs.
Come on, virgin, just say it, dick.
Oh, you're a dick, all right? I glare at him all the way to the car. Reed manages to gain control of himself as he buckles up. He leans over to kiss me, and that's all it takes for my irritation to fade. I'm practically floating on air during my morning shift at the French Twist, and my good mood stays with me throughout the school day. I run into Reed in the hall a few times, but other than a few secretive looks and a wink from him, we don't speak. I don't mind, because I'm not sure I'm ready to advertise to everyone at Astor Park that I'm kinda sorta involved with my kinda sorta stepbrother. At lunch, Valerie and I are shocked when Savannah gestures for us to sit with her and her friends. I guess Operation Take Down Daniel Delacorte was a success in more ways than one, though Savannah still doesn't seem entirely comfortable around me. After school, I lie on the south lawn doing my homework until Reed and Easton are done with their team meeting, and then Reed drives me back to the mansion, keeping his arm around me during the whole ride. When we get home, we discover that Callum has gone on a business trip to Nevada, which means we'll have the house to ourselves until Saturday. Hell yeah. That evening, Reed waltzes into my bedroom while I'm reading. Sure, come on in, I don't mind, I say sarcastically. I roll over on my back and watch as he sets a huge bowl of popcorn on my nightstand.
Thanks, don't mind if I do. Want something to drink?
He peers into my mini-fridge.
Don't you have anything without the word diet in here?
He walks over and leans out in the hall.
Bring the beer. Ella just has diet shit.
I hear a faint,
got it,
echo from the end of the hall. I scoot up against the headboard. I'm afraid to ask what's going on.
We're watching the game.
We?
You, me, and Easton. We,
he explains, and then climbs on the bed. I move over so he doesn't sit on top of me. I look around dubiously. The bed is big enough to hold Reed and me, but Reed, Easton, and me? I don't think we'll fit.
Sure we will.
Smirking, Reed lifts me up and drops me between his legs, pulling me snug against his chest. Easton arrives moments later, taking my abandoned spot. He doesn't even blink at the cozy position he finds us in. Reed places the popcorn bowl between us and flicks on the television. Where are the twins? I ask. My bed feels crowded with two giant royals on it, but add the twins, and it would be like stuffing double D's into an A-cup bra.
They're going over to Lauren's house,
Easton answers before shoving a handful of popcorn in his mouth.
Both of them? Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to.
Reed hints, and I promptly shut up. Even if I had more questions, I don't think I'd be able to get any answers. Once the game is on, it's like I'm not even there. Reed and Easton cheer, groan, and high-five each other. I spend my time admiring all the tight asses on the screen, and smirking at all the innuendo-laden commentary, like how the one guy with the ball really needs to jam the hole, and how the other team isn't getting enough penetration in the backfield. Neither of the guys appreciate my observations. I settle in between Reed's legs and just enjoy the company. Occasionally, Reed reaches over and rubs my back, or runs his hands through my hair. They're careless, offhand gestures, as if we've been a couple for years, and I drink it up like a thirsty kitten. There are way worse ways to spend my night, I muse. The score is pretty lopsided, and somewhere along the line I doze off, full of popcorn and bored by the game. I wake to the sound of Easton's phone blowing up. He leaves to answer it, and Reed stretches out beside me like my own personal heater. Who's that? I mumble, feeling groggy.
Who knows?
Were you sleeping? No, just resting my eyes. What's going on with the game?
The Lions are killing the Titans.
Are those real team names, or are you just making stuff up?
Those are real team names.
He sounds amused. A warm finger skims across the waistband of my shorts.
I stretch, feeling a newly familiar heat seep into my bones.
Are we done watching football?
It's more of a suggestion than a question.
Reed's blue eyes get stormy. He climbs over me, caging me between his arms and legs.
Yeah, I think we're done with that.
His head descends slowly, and I lick my lips in anticipation.
What the hell? Did the Lions just score?
Easton bursts in. Reed sighs and heaves himself off me.
See how nice it would be if people started knocking?
I whisper, as Easton grabs the remote from the bed and turns up the volume on the game. Reed just folds his arms and grunts.
We both watch as Easton begins to pace. The team wearing blue and silver and sporting Lions on their helmets is marching down the field.
The opposing team with a flaming T on their helmets isn't doing a very good job protecting its scoring area. For the next 20 minutes, the blue and navy team scores one touchdown after another, until the score is tied. Easton is beside himself. By the time the whistle blows, he's as white as the sheer curtains hanging on the windows.
What's going on?
Reed demands.
How much did you put on this game?
I inherited addiction issues from my mommy.
Oh, Easton.
Easton shrugs, trying to act like it's no big deal.
I got this, big bro.
Reed's jaw works as if he's fighting not to yell at Easton. Finally, he says,
If you need anything, hit me up.
Easton gives us a weary smile.
Yeah, of course.
Gotta make a phone call now.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do,
he says with forced cheeriness. Does Easton have a gambling problem? I ask once Easton's door closes down the hall. Reed exhales in frustration.
Maybe. I don't know. I think he gambles and drinks because he's bored, not because he's addicted. But then I'm not a psychiatrist, am I?
I flounder for something to say, but can only come up with, I'm sorry.
He shrugs. Nothing you or I can do about it.
By the fierce set of Reed's jaw, I can tell he doesn't believe that for a minute.
I'm going to bed.
Reed pushes away from the mattress. I curl my legs underneath me, fighting the urge to beg him to stay.
Okay,
I say in a small voice. His brows scrunch together.
I don't think I'd be good company tonight.
That's fine. I rise from the bed and head toward the bathroom. Am I hurt that he doesn't want to stay with me tonight?
A little.
He grabs my wrist as I walk by.
I'm just worked up and I don't want to pressure you into anything.
Is this an it's not you, it's me speech? Because that's the absolute worst. No one wants to hear that. A reluctant smile tugs at his mouth.
No. It's a you're too hot for your own damn good speech, and I'm having a hard time, literally, keeping my hands off you.
I round on him and poke a finger into his rock-solid chest. Who says I want you to keep your hands to yourself? He grabs my finger and hauls me up against him.
You really ready, Ella?
Ready for it all?
I hesitate, and that's all the answer he needs. Dipping his head close to mine, he runs his nose along my cheek.
You aren't, and that's okay, because I can wait. But sleeping next to you is torture for me. Your body pressed up against me, and I wake up.
He breaks off, but I know what he's saying, because it's true for me too. I'm suddenly aching in spots I didn't realize could ache.
We could do other stuff.
I lick my lips, thinking of the pool house. He groans and buries his face in my neck.
There's no rush. Seriously, we're gonna take our time and do this right.
With another deep breath, he sets me away from him and strokes a strand of hair out of my eyes.
We okay?
There's no point in disagreeing. I know Reed well enough that once he's made up his mind about something, it takes a long time to change it. Which means I'm spending the night alone.
We're okay.
I rise on my tiptoes to kiss his cheek. But Reed turns his face, so our lips meet. The long, tender kiss he gives me goes a long way toward easing any hurt feelings. The feel of his hard frame against my body doesn't hurt either. And the last hints of rejection are brushed away when Reed slips into my bed later that night. Silently, I pull his arm around me, and fall into a deep and welcome sleep.
Chapter 32. On Thursday, Valerie accosts me at lunch. "What is going on with you and Reed?" I try to look as innocent as possible when I answer.
"What do you mean?"
"Apparently, yesterday he walked by you on the way to bio and flicked your hair," she announces. I stare at her and then burst out laughing.
"And that's some sort of big declaration by Reed Royal?"
I ask incredulously. She nods. "Reed does not do PDA, even when he was supposedly dating Abby." I crinkle my nose at this. I don't like hearing those two names in the same sentence. Valerie ignores me and continues. "He avoided her. There was no kissing her up against the locker, no holding her hand. Sure, she went to his football games, but he's on the field, so it's not like they were making out during the games or anything." She looks thoughtfully into the distance, as if envisioning them. I hold back a gag. "I think the only time people ever saw them together was at a party. So yeah, the fact that he intentionally reached out to touch you is huge." I stare at my tray of locally sourced organic chicken breast and farm-fresh vegetables, so that Valerie doesn't see that it's huge to me, too. The graze of his fingers against the base of my neck on Tuesday morning stayed with me for hours. When I get myself under control, I glance back at Valerie. "We're enjoying a truce," is all I admit to. She shoots me a worried look, but doesn't press because she's a friend. Impishly, I reach across the table and grab her hand, pressing it to my chest. "You're first in my heart, Val."
"I better be, bitch."
She honks my boob, and I slap her hand away. Giggling, she sticks a carrot in her mouth. After we're done with lunch, she tells me that the Moonglow Club is having another 18 and over night. "You in?" I hesitate, because my first instinct is to text Reed and find out what he's doing. But then I realize that not only would I give myself away to Valerie, but that no matter what is going on between Reed and me, I need a life separate from his. So I nod firmly. "I'm in." She bumps my shoulder companionably as we walk back toward our lockers. "Are we dancing in the cage?" I ask with a grin. "Is the Pope Catholic? Am I going to need another outfit?" She shakes her head in mock dismay. "It's like it's your first day of school all over again. Have you learned nothing since you've been here? Of course you need a new outfit." Valerie and I make plans to go shopping later. "I'll pick you up after work," I tell her, remembering my brand new set of wheels cooling at home. She stops abruptly and grabs my arm.
"What do you mean you'll pick me up? Did you get a car?"
I nod.
"A convertible.
Callum gave it to me." She whistles long and low, but loud enough that it turns the heads of everyone within about 10 feet from us.
"Did you bring it to school?"
She claps her hands together.
"I want to see it."
No. I stall, trying to think of a plausible excuse for why I rode with Reed this morning. "I caught a ride with Reed. He's got football practice in the morning, so it makes more sense for us to carpool." Valerie rolls her eyes.
"How long are you two going to pretend that you're not going out?"
I suppress a smile. "For as long as anyone will buy it." And that is as close as I'll come to admitting she's right. Valerie predictably loves the little car, and I use some of my stash to buy an outfit for tonight. She takes me to an ordinary mall, where the prices are high, but not so high that I feel like I'm wearing an entire paycheck to the club. At the Royal Mansion, I do her hair and makeup and my own, creating dramatic nightclub looks. "I look hot," Valerie declares as she examines herself in the mirror. "Let me take a selfie for Tam."
"I can take it for you."
She hands me the phone and I snap a couple of photos, which she sends off immediately to her boyfriend. Those two seem to have such a great relationship, even though he didn't show up a week ago like he'd promised. Val didn't seem too upset about it.
"How do you do it?"
I think of Reed in college, and wonder if I'd be able to handle him being around so many pretty older girls. Valerie takes a shot of me before answering. "I have to trust him. I sent him lots of pictures."
"Nudes?"
"Yep." "Naughty photos, too, mostly of my chin down, just in case." She makes a face.
Not that I don't trust him, but if someone steals his phone or something.
Right. I hesitate.
Was Tam your first? Are you judging me? She asks curiously. No, obviously not. I wave my hands in the air. No judgment.
She peers at me in disbelief.
Wait. Have you never had sex before?
I lower my head and admit. No, never.
Never?
She draws back.
Wow. Now I'm rethinking your relationship with Reed because there's no way that dude is going without.
I stutter at a loss for words. She slaps a hand across her mouth.
I did not mean that. If he's with you, then I guarantee he's not sleeping around. When he dated Abby, I never saw him hook up with another girl.
Yeah, okay. I feel a little numb. It never even occurred to me that he might be sleeping with someone else.
Is that why he's not pressuring me?
Valerie squeezes my shoulder.
It was a stupid comment. I didn't mean anything by it, honest. I tried to be funny and it came off wrong. Forgive me?
Of course.
I hug her, but in the back of my mind, doubt has crept in.
A few minutes later, we step out of my bedroom in our teeny dresses, high heels, and big hair. Easton is leaving his room at the same time and lets out a long whistle.
Where are you two going?
Moonglow. They're having another rave, I explain. He quirks an eyebrow.
You tell Reed about this?
No, should I? I hadn't seen Reed since this morning.
All right. See you later,
Easton says, and jogs down the stairs.
Later where? I yell after him. Where do you think?
He snorts.
I tell Reed you're wearing a band-aid and cage dancing, and you're gonna have one hot-headed royal on your hands.
So, I guess that's a yes that Reed and Easton will be there tonight, Valerie surmises. I don't make any attempt to hide my satisfied smile. Valerie and I are escorted to the cages almost before we can clear the entrance. I guess they remember us. We put on a show for two songs, until I hear my name being called. I look down through the bars and see Easton, with his hands cupped around his mouth, yelling my name. When he catches my attention, he points toward the bar. I follow the line of his arm to Reed, who's leaning against the bar top in virtually the same pose as that first night Valerie and I danced here. Only this time, he doesn't disappear. He waits. He waits for me to climb down from the cage. He waits for me to walk all the way across the room. He waits for me to reach him. And all the while, his blazing eyes track each step that brings me closer. I halt a hand's width away.
What are you thinking about?
I ask huskily. He looks pointedly at my chest, and then the length of my legs exposed by the short, tight black skirt.
You know exactly what I'm thinking about.
He inhales deeply.
But since we're in public, I can only think about it.
I lift a hand to his shoulder, and this guy who doesn't like public displays of affection takes it and brings it to his mouth. His hot breath gusts against my palm, and then, with a hard jerk, he brings me flush against him.
You're driving half the guys in here crazy.
He growls against my hair. Only half? I joke.
The other half are in love with Easton.
He informs me. He dips his hand underneath my hair and runs it all the way down to the small of my back. A small tug brings me sharply between his legs. We both suck in a breath when we make contact. Wanna dance? I manage to croak out. He tosses back whatever he's drinking, slams the empty glass on the bar, and takes my hand.
Let's go.
On the dance floor, we press tight against each other. One of his strong thighs finds its way between my legs, and he bends his knees so that I'm virtually riding him. Then he runs his fingers across the newly exposed skin at the backs of my thighs. I twine my arms around his neck and hang on, trusting him.
I almost exploded in my pants watching you dance,
he rasps in my ear.
Yeah? You like watching Val and I dance together? I tease.
Every guy's fantasy, I think.
There was someone else up there with you?
He smooths a hand over my hair.
I only saw you.
I nearly melt into a puddle of goo. Keep talking like that and you might get lucky. His breath hitches, and his fingers tighten against my flesh.
You want to get out of here?
Heated, anxious, totally desperate for him, I nod helplessly.
Let me find Easton and let him know we're taking off.
He squeezes my hand and leans forward to brush his lips against my temple. That innocent kiss lights me up. I'm going to the bar to get a glass of water. I'm beyond parched.
Okay, I'll be back in a sec.
Reed is swallowed up by the crowd, while I move in the opposite direction and attempt to flag down a bartender. Val is still up in the cages, dancing her pretty booty off. A cute guy with floppy brown hair stands in front of me. He's wearing a button-down shirt, rolled and cuffed over a pair of plaid shorts. He looks vaguely familiar, and I wonder if he goes to Astor Park.
Ella Royal, right? He asks.
I've given up on trying to get anyone to call me by my actual last name. I hold a tenner between my fingers, and one of the bartenders acknowledges me with the tip of his chin. Water? I mouth. The girl nods, and I stuff the tip into the jar. It's a lot of money for water, but I'm thirsty, and I figure it's the fastest way to get served. Yeah, I'm Ella. Are you from Astor Park?
Scott Gastenberg.
He leans an elbow on the counter.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. I take the glass from the bartender and yell my thanks.
I'm just wondering whether you started with the twins and are moving up the royal age ladder, or are you just jumping around?
I jerk around so fast the water spills all over my hand.
Screw you.
He holds out his hands.
I'm more than willing, baby, but my last name's not Royal.
I resist the urge to throw the entire contents of the glass in this asswipe's face.
Go to hell.
I slam the glass on the bar top, then turn around and bump into Reed. He takes one look at my face, then at plaid shorts' insolent expression, and immediately sizes up what's going on. His eyes narrow, and he shoves me behind him.
What'd you say to her?
He demands. It's nothing. I tug on Reed's arm. Nothing. Let's just go. Scott either lacks any self-preservation instincts or has a lot of liquid courage, because he grins and says,
Ellie here just offered to screw me, but I reminded her I wasn't a royal. I'm not even a cousin, but hey, I'm willing to take her off your hands when she's done with you guys.
Reed's fist flies out so fast I don't have a chance to react. By the time I realize what's going on, Scott is on the ground and Reed is pounding on him. Even over the heavy bass, I can hear the crack of knuckles against bone. Reed! Reed, come on! I yell and pull at his shoulders, but he's too focused on rearranging all of Scott's features. Others try to help me, although I think some of them are actively cheering on the fight. Finally, three bouncers push through the crowd and yank Reed away, leaving Scott lying on the floor, blood streaming from his nostrils and one eye swollen shut.
You're going to have to leave.
One of the black t-shirt-clad bouncers snaps.
Fine.
Reed jerks out of the bouncer's grasp and grabs my wrist. I know what he wants before he opens his mouth. I'll get Easton, I assure him. Reed nods. He points to one of the bouncers, a blonde guy who looks like he eats steroids for breakfast and small children for dinner.
You stay with her. Anything happens to her again?
He stresses that word.
This place will be shut down and turned into a kiddie playground before end of business tomorrow.
I don't wait for the bouncers and Reed to come to an agreement. It's time for Reed to get out of here. He's filled with adrenaline, and I can see he needs to exit this bar before the urge to get into another fight overtakes him.
Easton's over by the bathrooms,
Reed shouts as the bouncers escort him toward the entrance. I've lost track of Val, but I've got to get to Easton. As I hurry away, I hear whispers. The people nearest to the fight have started gossiping.
What just happened?
I think we just saw the proclamation of another royal decree. Say anything bad about Ella Royal, and you'll be drinking your meals from a straw for the next 6 months.
She must be awesome in bed, someone remarks.
No sex like trashy sex, another voice says.
Those bitches will let you do anything.
My ears burn, and I'm tempted to repeat Reed's violent actions on every one of those smug faces. But I can't stop, because I catch sight of Easton in the hallway near the bathrooms. I push through the crowd, but Easton doesn't go into the men's room. Instead, he walks to the end of the hall, toward the exit door. "Excuse me," I mutter, as I duck around the line of girls waiting to use the ladies' room, and past a couple making out in a not-so-dark corner.
"Easton,"
I call, but he doesn't stop. I know he hears me, because I can see his body twitch in acknowledgement, but he just keeps going. I race down the hall, emerging from the door several seconds after him. I instantly skid to a halt. He's in the back alley, with two other guys, and it doesn't look like they're enjoying a smoke break. Oh no, what has Easton gotten himself into? The two guys have dark brown hair, slicked back away from their faces. They're wearing white t-shirts and jeans that hang down low, and I'll bet if they turned around, I'd see their boxers. Not that I would want to. A metal chain hangs from one of their belt loops.
"Go inside, Ella."
Easton's voice is harder and colder than I've ever heard from him before.
"Now hold up," says the chain guy. "You can pay your debt off with her if you want."
He grabs his crotch.
"Lend the bitch to me for a week and we'll call it even."
My life before the Royals was filled with seediness, and I recognize a shakedown when I see one. The Monday night football game runs through my mind. "How much?" I ask Mr. Chain.
"Ella,"
Easton starts. I cut him off. "How much does he owe you?"
$8,000.
I nearly faint, but beside me, Easton tries to shrug it off like $8,000 is pocket change.
"I'll have it next week. All you have to do is sit tight."
If it was pocket change, he wouldn't be here in the back of the bar being threatened, and Mr. Chain knows it.
"Yeah, right. You rich kids live on credit, but not with me. I don't carry your broke asses on my books for longer than a week, because I gotta pay the bills. So pony up your cash, or you get to be this week's warning to all your pussy friends that Tony Loreno isn't anyone's pawnbroker."
Easton's shoulders set in a hard line as he slightly adjusts his stance. Shit. He's preparing for a fight, and we all know it. Tony reaches inside his pocket, and fear spikes in my chest.
"Stop!"
I dig into my purse for my keys. "I've got your money. Wait here."
"What the hell, Ella?"
Easton barks out. No one waits. They all follow me to my car. Chapter 33. As I hit the key fob to unlock the trunk, I scan the parking lot for Reed's Range Rover. I don't see it anywhere, which means he probably parked in one of the spots along the other side of the building. Relief floods my stomach, because Reed stumbling onto this little showdown would be the worst thing that could happen right now. He already beat the crap out of one guy tonight, and I know he wouldn't hesitate to do it again, especially to back up his brother.
"You better not be reaching for a weapon in there,"
Tony hisses out, hovering behind me. I roll my eyes. "Yeah, buddy, I keep an arsenal of assault rifles in the trunk of my car. Chill." I lift up the felt square that covers the compartment for the spare tire and reach for the plastic baggie I stashed underneath the jack. There's a heavy feeling in my chest as I pull the stack of cash from the bag and count out $8,000 worth of bills. Easton doesn't say a word, but he watches me with a frown. He frowns even harder when I slap the bills into Tony's hand. "There. You guys are square now. Pleasure doing business with you," I say sarcastically. Smirking, Tony stands there and counts the money. Twice. When he starts to do it a third time, Easton growls.
"It's all there, jackass. Get the hell out of here."
"Watch yourself, Royal," Tony warns. "I still might make an example of you just because I feel like it."
But we all know he won't. A beating would only draw attention to us, and to his business dealings.
"Oh, and you can place your bets somewhere else from now on," Tony says coldly. "Your money's no good to me anymore. I'm tired of seeing your ugly face."
The two guys stalk off, Tony tucking the cash in his back pocket. And yep, I can see his boxers hanging out of his pants. When they're gone, I spin around to Easton.
What is wrong with you? Why would you ever associate with creeps like that?
He just shrugs. Adrenaline surges through my blood as I stare at him in disbelief. We could have been hurt. Tony could have killed him. And he's standing there like he doesn't give a shit about any of it. The corner of his mouth is even quirked up as if he's trying not to smile.
This is fun for you? I yell. Almost getting killed gives you a boner, is that it?
He finally speaks.
Ella.
No, just shut up. I don't want to hear it right now.
I shove my hand in my purse and grab my phone, then text Reed to let him know Easton's riding back with me, and that he should meet us at home. I'm still holding the plastic baggie in my other hand, so I toss it into the trunk, trying not to think about how empty it is. $8,000 gone, plus another $300 for my shopping trip with Val today. Until Callum gives me next month's $10,000 allowance, I only have $1,700 in my escape fund. I hadn't planned on running, not after all the positive changes in my life, but right now, I'm tempted to take the money and go.
Ella,
Easton starts. I hold up my hand. Not now. I have to find Val. I dial her number, hoping she hears it inside the club. Fortunately, she answers.
Hey, is everything okay?
I glare at Easton. It is now. Can you meet us outside at the car? The club isn't going to let us back in.
On my way.
Ella, Easton tries again. I'm not in the mood. He clamps his mouth shut, and we wait in tense silence for Val to appear. When she does, I force Easton to sit in the cramped back. Val opens her mouth to object, but decides wisely that it's pointless. The drive to her house is in complete silence.
Call me tomorrow,
she says as she climbs out. Easton follows her out of the car.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about tonight.
She gives me a forgiving smile.
Shit happens, babe. No biggie.
Night, Val.
She waves her fingers and disappears inside the Carrington mansion. Quietly, Easton slides into the passenger seat. I clutch the steering wheel in a death grip and force myself to focus on driving, but it's hard to do when I'm seconds away from smacking the guy beside me. About 5 minutes into the drive back home, my breathing finally steadies, and Easton's voice drifts over to me.
I'm sorry.
There's genuine regret there, and I turn to look at him.
You should be.
He hesitates.
Why do you have money hidden in your car?
Because I do. It's a stupid answer, but that's all he's getting from me. I'm too pissed off to offer anything else. But Easton proves that he knows me better than I think.
My dad gave it to you, didn't he? That's how he convinced you to come live with us, and now you're keeping it hidden in case you need to skip town.
I clench my teeth. Ella. I jump when his warm hand covers mine, and then his head moves to rest on my shoulder. His soft hair tickles my bare skin, and I force myself not to run a comforting hand through it. He doesn't deserve comfort right now.
You can't leave,
he whispers, his breath fanning over my neck.
I don't want you to go.
He kisses my shoulder, but there's nothing sexual about it. Nothing romantic in the way his hand tightens over my knuckles.
You belong with us. You're the best thing that ever happened to this family.
Surprise filters through me.
Okay, wow.
You're ours, Easton mumbles. I'm sorry about tonight. I really am, Ella. Please, don't be mad at me. My anger melts away. He sounds like a lost little boy, and I can't stop myself from stroking his hair now. I'm not mad. But damn it, Easton, the gambling needs to stop. I might not be there to bail you out next time.
I know, he groans. You shouldn't have had to bail me out tonight.
I promise I'll pay you back, every last cent. He lifts his head and presses a kiss to my cheek.
Thank you for doing that. I mean it.
Sighing, I turn my eyes back to the road.
You're welcome.
At the house, Reed is already waiting in the driveway. He glances from me to Easton in suspicion, but I head inside before he can question what went down tonight. Easton can fill him in. I'm too tired to rehash it.